the red, the white, the blue. The other one's got a rattlesnake with a simple statement made. Don't tread on me is what it says, and I'll take that to my grave.
Host Joel Clayfish, you're listening to 548 WAUK.
This is
101 FM, The Shaw. And I'm joined in the studio today in the fishbowl with Bill Fremoth, who accompanied me on a trip to South Africa, which I find myself trying, Bill, to describe it to people. And as colorful as a linguist as I, you know, purport to be, it's still difficult to describe the beauty and what you're going to see and what you experience there.
Yeah, most definitely. It's like trying to describe a sunset to someone. You know, they've seen a million of them, but you might have saw that one that was just a little bit better. And that's just exactly how that place is. It's almost indescribable. There's things that you could possibly compare it to, but it wouldn't give it the justice. You know, you'd be just throwing examples out that until you really see it yourself, you have no idea what it is.
Now, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk for a minute about the cultural experience of South Africa. South Africa is this cultural melting pot that's just unbelievable. There are 14 official languages in South Africa, and the cast of people are just some of the kindest people you'll ever meet, warmest people you'll ever meet. Eric, who guided us, and Diafon, who was our waterfall guide, and we're going to talk about waterfall in the next segment. But and Vuyo, who is a member of the Xhosa tribe, and he speaks mainly the Xhosa language, and our guides speak English and Xhosa and Afrikaans, and many of the people we encounter there speak Afrikaans, and getting to know them, and I will say one of the biggest differences from my first trip to my second trip was that now the folks who were working there, who were there and part of our experience, know me a little better. So they're more open with me, and learning the culture of the different tribes that exist in South Africa, and the influence of the Afrikaans on the food and the language, and the South African people you encounter there was just, that to me is as wonderful as the hunting and the views and the scenery, getting to know the people who, I mean, and then there's Diafon, who is a character by any stretch, our waterfall hunting guide. And if I can try to describe him, he's about 5'8" and
that's generous.
That's generous probably. But he guided a few of the times that we went out, and man, that guy can hike up and down a mountain with the best of them. I'll tell you, I was breathing heavy and sweating, and he was like, come on, catch up, let's go. But the cultural experience of it is as important and enjoyable as the hunt.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Like you said, the people are just super kind, and that really made the trip is a lot of people were just willing to help you with all the trials and tribulations we had of just travel there and back. At any point, if you needed help, you could, anyone there was, you know, willing to give a hand or at least set you in the right direction. The whole mentality I see around here is kind of every man for himself, especially in airports. You see it, people just want to get their stuff, get in and get out, whereas in Johannesburg, as soon as you get off the plane, there were so many people there just willing to help you, greet you, get your stuff, help you, you know, get out of there. Obviously, they want a little bit of incentive off it, but, you know, it's the name of the game, too, so.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that sticks out for me about South Africa is customer service. You know, I think sometimes around, you know, in the United States, we take customer service a little for granted. And, you know, South Africa is a first world country with first world amenities, but there are definitely some things, aspects of the culture of South Africa that are kind of set back in time a little bit. And some of that's not a bad thing because they take their time a little more to enjoy a meal. The meals are longer and it's more visiting. There's almost a European attitude about it to some extent.
Yeah, I would agree the European aspect in there. They do. It's kind of funny. I tried comparing it to the time it takes people to do stuff. It is very similar to island time. Anytime you're in the Caribbean or even around in Mexico, people just take their time to do things a little bit longer. No one's in a rush, which to someone that lives fast paced, like where we live here, everything is, like you said, with customer service. If your meal's not out in 5 minutes, you're scrambling and waiting. As in there, you just took your time and relaxed and breathed it all in, and you know what you were going to get was going to be great.
Yes. We have a, we've got a special guest who's just calling in right now, Matt Eubanks. Matt was on the trip with Bill and me, and Matt is from Central Florida. And Matt brought, this was fascinating because Matt went through all the rigors to bring a firearm with him, but he did not bring a traditional firearm. Matt Eubanks brought a flintlock. Now, a flintlock has a piece of flint on it that strikes metal, produces a spark, hits a pan with black powder in it, that travels into the barrel of the gun, hits more black powder, and shoves a bullet ball out the front of this thing. And Matt Eubanks, you brought that along to South Africa and attempted to kill something with it, didn't you?
Hello?
Can you hear us, Matt? Are you there, Matt? Well, Matt Eubanks, can you hear us? Well, it sounds like we lost Matt Eubanks. He was calling in from Central Florida, but let's talk about Matt for a minute. And God love him for trying this. He's got a flintlock, which is an incredibly primitive first form of a long gun, and you can't call it a rifle because it's not have a rifled barrel.
Right, smoothbore.
Smoothbore, and flintlock is what was used at the founding of our country in the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. And a flintlock is a gun that uses some old school, very heavy powder. Now, Matt is on hold with us. We're going to see if he's there. Can you hear us now, Matt? Matt, can you hear us? Have we got you yet?
No. I hear the other guy.
All right. Well, Matt, tell us about bringing a flintlock to South Africa. Well, we lost Matt again. At any rate, he had some trials and some tribulations with the flintlock.
Yeah, I would say that he definitely did. But it was par for the course with everything that was going on there. We had our ups and downs, but he rebounded pretty good from it, I would say, because he ended up with quite the trophy list when he left that place.
Yeah, he sure did. And one of the things about South Africa is you can attempt to take game with any method you like. I personally use a rifle, and I don't travel with a rifle because when you travel with a rifle, there's a lot more paperwork involved in bringing it to a foreign country. And the guides in South Africa, anywhere you go, if you choose to make that trip, they're going to have rifles for you to use.
And good stuff, too. I mean, that's their job. They're going to, do what they can to put you on the best animal, and they're not going to give you subpar gear to do that.
And that is something that is important. A lot of people say, well, if you've got a list of animals that you're pursuing there, what, are they just going to have you shoot something to shoot it? No. They're very concerned about preserving the resource, very concerned about conservation, and very concerned about utilizing every part of that animal. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about that aspect of it, the waterfowl hunt and eating what we killed while we were there and what happens to the rest of the meat. And we'll be right back on Raised in the Shaw with me, Joel Clayfish, on 540 AM WAUK. But I shot a man in Reno just